Good evening, everyone, and Happy New Year again. It's great to see everyone here. So even though these arbitrary flips of the Western calendar are don't have any inherent meaning, sometimes it's useful to use them to our advantage for reflection. And what I thought I'd do tonight is look at our intentions for the coming year and possibly how SIM and the vision of SIM could support that. So I called the talk Vision and Intention, but it's actually going to be Intention and Vision. So we'll start with intention. And in the Buddhist path, the Noble Eightfold Path, intention is the second factor. So the first factor is right view. So you have to know where you're going before you actually head out. So right view is actually seeing things as they are. And right intention is the word also can be translated as right thought. So it is having thoughts that are conducive to behaving properly. And then the next three factors in the path are the behavior, speech, action, and livelihood. So throughout tonight, I don't want to take vision or intention in a vacuum. I want to tie it very much to action in the world. Gil Fronsdal from Redwood City links intention and right view in this way. By applying the perspective of right view to the intentions we live by, we can determine if our intentions either cause suffering or contribute to the end of suffering. The Buddha singled out three intentions or attitudes or ways of thinking that cause suffering and are off track, that is, which take us away from the path. These are lust, ill will, and hostility. Renunciation, goodwill, and compassion of right intention, so the opposite of those, so lust, non-lust would be renunciation. Non-ill will would be goodwill. And non-hostility would be compassion. So the renunciation, goodwill, and compassion of right intention clearly establish the path of practice within the context of our interpersonal relationships. So again, not in a vacuum. We're talking very much here about relationships and action. And then the next three steps in the Eightfold Path are about putting these intentions into action. So this past year, I did the 10-month course. Several of us did this 10-month course with Steve Armstrong. One of the things they asked us to do was to set an intention to meditate every day. So 365 days last year, I meditated all but 4 days. And you know, I don't keep track of it that much, but I mean, I did this year because I wanted to see if I met my intention. But generally, my guess is that I've missed more than 4 days in previous years, you know, without having it all written down. So I think that illustrates, not that that's any big deal, but I think that illustrates that the power of intention is not necessarily that it's, you know, written up on a refrigerator and we're looking at it every day, but that it's just sort of, you set the intention and then you let it rest in the back of the mind. So I think it's helpful here to, for purposes of our language tonight, to distinguish between intention, aspiration, and motivation. So those are the three words I'm going to use for kind of a timeline of what it is that we wish for. Now, understanding right off the bat that having any kind of expectation is where, you know, frustration and all of that can come from, right? So we need to be sort of careful in this path that these expectations aren't sort of have to have or something that, oh, if I don't have that, I'm not a good meditator or anything like that. What these are meant to be is helpful aids in getting us where we want to be with this practice. And As Gil points out in the little reading, what we're trying to do is have more movement away from suffering and having more actions that relieve suffering, both for ourselves and others. Okay? So that's the right view that we're trying to hold to in setting any of these intentions. So when I say intention, for me, that sort of, I mean, right intention in the context of the Noble Eightfold Path is kind of takes in all three of the words I used, aspiration, intention, and motivation. The reason I want to make a distinction is I think it's helpful to kind of see these as like a time scale. So intention to me is sort of the aspiration. It's the what we're wanting in sort of a graspable human scale. Aspiration I like to use for what some people call deepest intention. You know, some people will ask you to look at your deepest intention for this practice and what the ultimate goal of your practice is. And I like to use the word aspiration for that. Intention to me is sort of what you're working on now. Sort of I kind of think of it as like the 1 to 5 year time frame for your practice. You know, as the Dalai Lama says, when they ask him, well, has your practice really changed you? And he said, well, 1 year, no, not at all. And 5 years, maybe a little. You know, so to me, like the 1 to 5 year time frame is sort of graspable, and it's something that we can get our arms around and actually feel like we're working on. Now, having said that, after 5 years, I have no idea if I've changed or not. I mean, that's the best way to figure that out is to ask your family, right? So, or the people that you see every day, coworkers. But in terms of this kind of timeline of intention, I like to use the word motivation for those momentary, you're walking through the kitchen and there's a plate of cookies there and you notice those, or you're driving down the street and see the coffee shop. It's like, oh, should I go in and get another cup of coffee type thing. The motivations are the things that sort of spring up instantaneously in response to conditions. I like to think of those as motivations. And so it's very instructive in terms of this practice to compare your motivations that appear during the day in response to conditions to your intention, which should be a longer range desire, healthy desire, chanda, dhamma chanda, really wanting to live within the dhamma. So comparing those, the alignment of those two is a really good way to see how we're doing. And then aspiration I use for, sort of the highest, longest range horizon of why are we doing this practice ultimately, where do we want to be when we're on our deathbed or beyond? So another way of thinking about aspiration is intention comes from the sutta on the two kinds of thought. This is Majjhima Nikaya 19. And that's where this line comes from that you'll often see referred to in discussions of intention. Bhikkhus, which bhikkhu in this context means just a practitioner of any kind. Bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. So this idea that what we're doing, we're not setting anything in stone. We're not tethering ourselves to some solid object. We're just trying to incline the mind toward skillful speech, behavior, and action. And skillful in this context means less suffering for ourselves and others. Okay, movement away from that. Ultimately, freedom from suffering. which could be an aspiration. We want to be free of suffering, whether that's a particular form of suffering or whether that's just in general relieving suffering for ourselves and others. Joseph Goldstein's definition, I guess, or a quote I liked from his book Mindfulness on right, he uses the right thought translation for right intention. He says, right thought includes all the intentions and aspirations that lead to wholesome actions, which result in the welfare and happiness of ourselves and others. So again, we see this link to action, that really the way that we measure the success of our, or perhaps the wholesomeness, the skillfulness of our intentions, is seeing what kind of actions do they lead to. So we may have career goals or job goals or goals for our family members or goals for what we want to do with a house or something like that. What I'd like to concentrate on tonight specifically is our intention for our practice. And my intention for this year is to do two retreats. I set an intention when I graduated from the training program in 2008 that I would do 2 to 3 retreats a year. I committed to 2. I've done 3 some years. And I've been able to do that. I've been able to do a couple of retreats a year ever since then. So the 2 retreats I have planned for this year are 3 weeks in Maui with Stephen Kamala in May and then the Sim retreat in the fall. So trying to get, again, to meditate every day. I'm taking a online course from Meg Goller on the, she calls it preparing the ground for samadhi, but it's about dependent, liberative dependent origination. And I intend to keep up with that course. It's just started in October. So as a thought experiment, why don't we just do a couple of minutes of allowing our intention to just sort of naturally arise, whatever intention may be in your mind for your practice, let's say for this 1 year. So just taking a moment, just relax, close your eyes if that's helpful, and just allow, without kind of analyzing or thinking too hard or being influenced too much by what I've said so far, just see what bubbles up when you try to, when you don't try. Just what bubbles up when you allow the idea of intention to suffuse your mind. What is the inclination of the mind in terms of your practice, in terms of how you would like to develop your practice? Perhaps teachers that you've been wanting to work with, retreats that you've been wanting to attend, books that you've been wanting to read, whatever it might be, just see what bubbles up without trying to think too hard or analyze it too much. So you're certainly free to keep this to yourself, but if anybody would like to share what their intention is for the coming year, maybe we could have a mic, Jerry, so that they can be heard and recorded. One of the handheld mics. Anybody care to share thoughts?
Actually, I have to say I kind of went through this exercise a couple weeks ago, and it's a general practice thing, but it arose out of practice, and it's to take this year to learn how not to complain. And it comes from the a couple things. When I went on retreat with Dennis Warren, and lots of people in here went on that retreat in 14.
Oh, the pilgrimage.
One of the things that the pilgrimage. So yeah, one yeah. of the thing the pilgrimage to India. One of the things that we worked with was there's a sutta about not complaining, and it always stuck with me. And also the thing recently has been coming up about not contending with anyone. And it feels really important to me to find a different way of being, both physically in my body and noticing when contention and complaining arises from like news and things, but also just what I carry. So for practice this year, I'm really curious to see what comes up. And I realize I don't really even know when I am complaining all the time, so that's going to take some time. And beyond that, I'm going to continue. I work with Heather Sundberg as my teacher, and I've got 2 retreats scheduled pretty much with her this year.
Great. Yeah, Tony Bernhardt says you can always tell when suffering is present if there's complaint.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a good measure.
Yeah.
There's one behind you, a fellow pilgrim.
Actually, I had set an intention several months ago when I began to realize that I had not taken advantage of a wonderful resource very close to my home, just an hour away, Spirit Rock. And so I started to sign up for one-day retreats. I've done 2, including with Jack Kornfield, which was just wonderful. And I just went online and signed up for a 4-day with Mark Coleman sometime in the early spring, I think. So just to you know, reach out beyond just my immediate environment for whatever resources. And I have the intention to continue to go to 2 local groups that I attend each week when I'm home. One of them is on Thursday night, so I miss that one frequently when I'm here. So.
So I'm also taking Meg's class and have been having to practice compassion for myself for not being able to keep up. It's very rich and full of things that you can read and practice, and it's been a challenge for me to keep up with everything, but she reminded me that I don't have to do it all, so that was helpful. But one thing that just came out of it this last week was I was looking back, I don't know what week it was, but it was talking about things like when you're driving or when you're in the supermarket and how you're interacting with people, and you know, and really having that be awareness that you're not just trying to get where you're trying to go, or you know, get checked out of the checkout line or whatever, but actually being aware the whole time you're there and actually interacting with people with compassion and seeing them and all, you know, being really present for that experience. And I've been recovering from surgery for the last few months, so I've been moving more slowly, and so that's really helped facilitate that. Just anyway, is that I go when it's not real busy, and I push my cart slowly, and I talk to the people, and I ask for help, and you know, so that's all been really positive. So I have an intention to continue doing that. But what came out for me was that's not that hard for me to do, but all the political stuff that's going on and my reactivity when I get hooked into reading news headline after headline. And so Meg actually gave me some meta phrases to use for some of my least favorite politicians. And I really am going to work with that. And it has to do with, like, may you be free from delusion. May you find ethical ways to find happiness. May you, and at first I thought I wasn't sure I could really do it, because in all honesty, I have some ill will and hostility towards some of them. But she helped me see that I could tap into phrases that actually I do honestly wish for them. And so I'm going to really work with that this year, because I see how divisive everything is, and I don't like being part of that. So, and then in addition, on an outward level, I'm planning to do two retreats this year also, and then finish the course with Meg also. So, and also spend more time outside practicing in nature too.
So I'll say something.
Please.
Yeah. Let's see. So what comes up for me just in that minute there is to actually to study more. So I already meditate daily, consistently. I come to SIM almost every Thursday anyway. I finished the long 10-month course, and there's just a wealth of information that's still left up on that website, and it's available to continue to study with. And so that's just something that occurs to me. It's kind of going on retreat is kind of a matter of course in my practice. So I intend to go on the SIM retreat, and I'll be on the weekend, the Vance Pryor weekend, et cetera, you know. But I think studying more, you know, some intellectual type things and listening to more Dharma talks or re-listening to Dharma talks, which is a great resource that SIM has. So it's just the presence of learning about the Dharma on a regular basis and staying aware of that. So, you know, we all struggle with that whole thing about how aware, where's your mind in every moment, you know, and what's the attitude of mind. And so I think my path is to kind of intellectualize a little bit and then continue on with that kind of meditative thought on a regular basis.
Okay. Thank you.
So last year was a very difficult year for me in a number of ways, mostly external events and internal events. And I had found, I do meditate every day, but I had found that my practice was sort of gritting your teeth and hanging on by your fingernails kind of practice, where it wasn't deep. I was doing it in the same way that you exercise every day because you're supposed to. But I wasn't deepening the practice itself, and so I had an intention for myself that I was, in fact, every day when I do my meditation, to be extremely mindful of it and not let myself get away with mind wandering, and the things that one forgives oneself for, because we're supposed to not berate yourself for what happens in meditation. But the fact is that there's a way you can pull yourself in to a deeper state if you are truly mindful. So I've been doing that, and I am going to take the beginning meditation class as a way of reconnecting with the very basics of this and the reason I came to Buddhism in the first place.
Great. All right, well, thank you to those who shared and to those who have the intention in the silence of their heart. So, like many organizations, SIM has a mission, a vision, and means, and they're on our website. And to me, We shouldn't belong to an organization unless we know its mission and agree with it. So the mission is to serve, and it usually gets sort of explained a little bit up here in front briefly, is to serve as a learning, training, and community center for the development, integration, and skillful use of meditation practices and awareness in all aspects of individual, family, educational, institutional work, and community life. So again, training, practice, tied to our daily lives. The vision is, again, a little broader as you'd expect it to be. And it says that the mission is based on this vision: insight, vipassana meditation, and meditative awareness are powerful resources for living, problem solving, and transformation. The continued individual and community exploration and development of these resources leads to a life of clarity, balance, and peace expressed in the forms of generosity, wisdom, compassion, and ethical conduct. These experiential results provide a basis for enormous hope for the physical, emotional, and spiritual health and well-being of each of us, our families, our institutions, and our communities. So we can hear in that this clarity, balance, and peace are expressed in the forms of generosity, wisdom, compassion, and ethical conduct. So again, we're not meditating in a cave somewhere, actually applying the skills that slowly, piece by piece, incrementally, whether we realize it or not, we're acquiring these skills that the world needs so much right now: clarity, balance, and we're applying those specifically through these positive qualities that we're trying to encourage and cultivate: generosity, wisdom, compassion, ethical conduct. And that's obviously just the beginning of a list, right? But those are some good examples of the kind of qualities that we might want to be generating in our practice. So, it occurs to me that we have this vision for this organization, and we have the organization has its mission, but each of us in our own lives has some purpose that we're working towards, even if that's just to be a little bit kinder today or whatever it might be. And so it seems to me that if we're coming to and supporting this organization, which obviously all of you are by being here tonight, we should have some kind of expectation that the mission and the vision of the organization would support our own aspirations and our own intentions for our practice. Those should be linked. This organization should be supporting us in that. Oh, we shouldn't be coming here. So I think all of us have experienced, even tonight I felt that just sitting together, you can sort of feel the mutual support of everybody else that's here. I mean, that's really fascinating to me that we're all sitting here with our eyes closed and in silence, and yet, you feel that support for your practice just by having other people in the room that have it. And part of that reason for that is that the room is filled with people that have a similar intention. That's actually tangible. The fact that other people are sitting here with the intention of being mindful, of paying attention, of learning from what they see in this crazy mind when we do sit together. So that in itself, just coming here on a Thursday night, really supports whatever intention you may have for your practice, even if it's unconscious, because being in, as that famous dialogue between Ananda and the Buddha, having spiritual friends is a tremendous support for the practice. So, even if the function of this organization is as simple as providing a place where you can get together with other spiritual friends, then, that's worthwhile. But at least for those of us who really put a lot of energy into this organization, I think we can have a little bit higher expectation of it, that in some very concrete way. It's supporting our aspirations for the practice. In terms of what I'm talking about tonight, I'm talking about our ability to take these meditative skills into the world in some sort of action that is meaningful. So I thought it might be interesting and fun, and also maybe helpful for the organization to hear from you in terms of perhaps maybe where we could start, might be a little bit easier, would be ways in which SIM may have supported you recently in your action in the world or your workplace or something like that. And then maybe we could move on from there into a little discussion of how SIM might support you in the future, you know, whether that's this year or some new program that you've been thinking about that would be helpful but doesn't exist now and that sort of thing. So why don't we start? I would invite you to think of a time when just being in connection with the folks here, with the programs offered by SIM, helped you in some concrete way to act in the world, to handle perhaps a crisis that came along in your life, to meet a difficult situation in a way that you weren't able to meet before. Those are some things that are occurring to me as I talk this through. So does anybody have any responses to that? Perhaps past intentions that have been met?
So yeah, I agree about the sitting with other people thing. I've been meditating off and on for a long time. And, you know, the home practice is a challenge, of course. But then if you do it, I got the opportunity a year ago to go on this Mindfulness for Educators workshop at Harvard Graduate School of Education. So it was through work. I worked for Sac City College. And it really changed my life. And then I started sitting every day, or trying to. But then the longer you try to do that and you're just at home every day, I do yoga with other people, but like I just needed a place where I could come and sit with other people. So that's what SIM has done for me so far. And then at the same time, this late last year, I experienced some like personal loss and bumpy things with my parents' health. And I find the support is huge. And then having other resources. I'm going to do the beginning meditation class too.
Oh,
so yeah, quite simply, it's just great to have this place and the people to come hang out with and meditate. And then also the style of insight meditation is unique because there are a lot of different paths you can take even in Buddhism. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's
great.
It.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go again. As I said, it was a rough year. Many of you know that there was a fire at my house, and I've been dislocated. And one has friends, and you rely on them in many ways. But the Sangha came forward and helped me enormously, both tangibly and intangibly. And if it weren't for this, I cannot begin to express my gratitude for how good it felt to have a place to go after a fairly shattering experience and get the tangible support of other my fellow Sangha members who, what you were saying is part of it is that we all have the same intention to try to be better in some way, I suppose, and that's helpful, but I have enormous gratitude for that. And then the second part, you mentioned things that SIM can do. I have to say that it has been wonderful that we've had more teachers from, like Meg, and bringing Tony in more often, and to have, because our regular teaching staff does a yeoman's job, but the beauty of those fresh perspectives has really been energizing. Great. And I really appreciate the effort of the faculty in soliciting all those other teachers.
Great, thank you. Yeah, we just got a commitment from Noli Alexander to come back.
Oh, good.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And we're talking with a couple of other new teachers that I think you'll really enjoy. Vance Pryor in March. I've sat with him a couple times, and he's really a nice, fresh voice. So yeah, we have some new voices coming in this year as well.
We moved down to the area about a year ago, and one of the difficulties has been, for me, is acquiring new friends in a new place. You know, I've lived in Sacramento before, but we've been gone a long time. And I found that through this practice and the support of a group like that I'm finally able to encounter people without the kinds of judgments that put up almost concrete walls between myself and others, and allow other people to express and be who they are and be able to appreciate that and find where I might fit in that and not where they might meet my standards for friendship. And that's a big change, and I'm really appreciative of that, because I didn't think I would ever be able to do that. It's just something that did not come naturally to me, and for that I'm really grateful. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll go again. So as I mentioned before, I had surgery in October, and it was major surgery. And I had just come off the SIM retreat in September, and it was so helpful to have had that week with many of you and being in such a wonderful place that we were, and just really settling into a place internally. So I was much more able to go through everything I had to go through and be very present in the moment and really connect with gratitude through it all. I mean, even, you know, to the doctors, to the nurses taking care of me, even down to the guy who was running the machine, polishing the floor in the hospital. I was using my little walker and walking, and I said, I'm really enjoying looking at this beautiful floor. And, you know, and he was just like amazed, like somebody actually noticed, you know. So, I mean, and actually having it be kind of fun. And it was almost like being on retreat, you know, except for the drugs and the pain and everything. But, you know, but I mean, really, I was able to bring that kind of awareness to it. It was just like, oh, I don't have anywhere to go. I can just be here and go through each moment, and also to be with the pain, and also recognize the impermanence of that, and not, you know, not grab onto it and be like, oh, I'm in pain. They would ask me, like, well, how much pain are you in? And I was like, well, you know, and I started thinking, like, in Buddhist terms, well, it's kind of more, but it's like more of this kind. You know, is it really pain, or is it just an intense sensation? You know, I mean, I probably drove them nuts because I didn't just say five, you know. But all of that was really, it made it a totally different experience than it would have been if I had just gone into it with a lot of fear and a lot of, you know, just like ideas and resistance and all of that. And so it was really quite an experience. And then the support I had afterwards from folks in SIM, just checking in on me and bringing food over, or just stopping by to say hi and having a little visit, kept me connected to the group even when I wasn't really, when I was barely moving around my house for the first few weeks. So that was tremendously helpful too, and gratitude to all of you who were part of that. I really appreciate it. So it's good to be back here, but it was actually a really positive experience for me.
Thank you.
To say. I'm not sure what to say. I think what encouraged me was Dennis's talk about, I think it was doubt the last time I was here. I was so impressed with that talk. That encouraged me to meditate, have a goal of meditating every day. I was doing it, then I've been, because of the holidays and so many things going on, I want to make an intention of that, and finding the tape on the internet I keep losing, and listening to that, and because I don't have Wi-Fi in my apartment, listening to that as a focus of intention of that talk, to try to live that talk, because it impressed me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes a really good point that, you know, even though we do want to spend some energy around cultivating the positive qualities, it is really helpful to take some of those hindrances and just face them head on, you know, whether that's doubt or desire or aversion, whatever it might be. We sort of heard it in Wes Nisker's poem earlier, where, you know, there's the, you know, the joy and the sorrow of life all sort of interacting with each other. Thank you.
It's really incredible to me, because I came into this as an accessory, I feel like, as Jerry's wife. But I'm no longer just Jerry's wife here. But I feel like what it's brought for me is friendship, but it's brought me true friends. And I feel that sense every time I come here, that the barriers to true friendship are kind of, you know, it's a different process than meeting people at work or meeting people in other social situations. I feel like there's a truth to things, there's a realness to the encounters that I have here that are very different from the encounters that I have in other walks of life. But those encounters also help me to have those kinds of encounters in other walks of life as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like, because it's about opening myself up and listening better and being more present with those whom I'm with. So it's so very, very real, I guess. And when I come here, I sense so much compassion throughout the room. I've made friends here. I've lived through making a friend here and losing that friend to death, and seeing the Sangha step up and be present for her during that period of time and supporting her. And that was a beautiful experience. And if anything, that to me was the penultimate description of what Sim is all about, is being present with each other in the moment. So,
thank you.
I've been coming to Sim, I think, for about 7 years, and I've never lived closer than 2 hours away. And there's a reason that I make this trip. I have not found any other spiritual home where I feel so nurtured. And the Dharma talks in particular are so important to me, just to hear it. It's different than reading a book. It's and listening to how people put it into practice. And I know that I would not have gone through the mourning process after my spouse died in July in the way that I did had I not been coming here. instead of getting lost in grief, I really was able to watch what was happening and to experience whatever came up for me, whether I was driving in the car and suddenly had a memory that caused me to be sad and tearful. And I think that people kind of, some of my friends where I live, were a little surprised at how I did the process. They were expecting me to be, I think, just less able to function than I was during all of that. But it's a powerful practice to just be awake for what's going on. And I am so grateful for my Dharma friends, for this place to come and know that I'm going to walk away with a sense of peace and gratitude. So even though I don't get to take advantage as much as many of you do, I mean, if I lived in this town, I would be here every week. And it's just, it's a long drive. It really is. And I-80 is no fun. But I'm grateful when I can get here. And I thank you all for being a wonderful support to me.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again to all who shared. And whatever intentions you're holding in your heart, may it be so in this coming year. So let's finish with metta, recognizing that just like us, all beings want to be happy, whether they express that in their actions in the world in the way we agree with or not. All beings want to be free of suffering. And just dedicating the recognizing first, and then from that place, dedicating the incredible privilege that we have in being able to take advantage of this Dharma Center, to hear the teachings, to put them into practice in the world. So dedicating whatever merit we may have generated, the good energy that we've generated by being here together, practicing, discussing the Dharma, may we dedicate that to relieving the suffering of all beings, including ourselves. May all beings be safe and protected. May we and all beings be peaceful and happy, as healthy and strong as current circumstances allow. May we and all beings experience the ease of well-being, and may all beings be free of suffering. Thank you for your practice.